Our first case for argument is the Illinois Bell case. Mr. Stanton.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Hank Kelly, and I represent Globalcom, Inc., a telephone company that provides local exchange services in competition with Illinois Bell Telephone. Your Honor, you had mentioned Mr. Stanton would speak first. I'm Mr. Kelly.
Okay, that's fine. Whatever order you want.
The issue here is whether the district court erred when it concluded that Sections 251 and 271 of the Federal Act preempts the Illinois Commerce Commission's orders implementing Section 13-801 of the Illinois Public Utilities Act. In Frank Brothers versus Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
It would help me if, rather than talk about cases at the outset, maybe you could give us some very concrete example of a form of unbundling that you would like Bell to be forced to do that would be important to your business.
The same type of unbundling that the Federal Act...
No, no. Concretely.
Concrete examples. There is a network element referred to as DS1 and DS3 loops. Actually, those are two examples of network elements. Those are simply high-capacity loops that carriers use to provide telephone services.
Loops to the home or office?
Correct. This would
the last stage.
That is correct. It's the facility from the central office or from the switch to either the customer's premise or a business premise. Now, AT&T certainly provides these high-capacity loops under a tariff and also provides high-capacity loops under commercial agreements. But the court below concluded that AT&T was not required.
Not court below. Please just give me an example of what you want to do. Forget about the courts.
Those high-capacity loops are required under the Federal Act. Well, I'll give you another example. In addition, switching.
Why don't you stick with that example? Okay, we have high-capacity loops owned by Illinois Bell. Now, you want what? You want to get on those loops or what?
We want to be able to get access to those loops, yes.
And at what price? Not at the tariff price. That would be the price to the customer, but at what price do you want to pay?
At a cost-based rate, which is provided for under Section 13801 and under the Illinois Commerce Commission's orders adopted under that act.
And is that cost actually specified, or is that something that would have to be determined in proceedings?
That's a rate that would have to be determined in proceedings in front of the Illinois Commerce Commission.
And the alternative, if you don't have access to that, you'd either have to pay the tariffed rate, which obviously make it difficult, or what? You'd run your own?
We'd have to build our own facilities.
Well, what do you mean by facilities? It's a loop going to the customer's premises. So
dig the ground.
And you actually have to lay another wire.
There might be, on occasions, if it were a big office building, there might be another competitive carrier that has itself dug under the ground, under the manholes, and delivered a high-capacity facility loop or transport facility to that building, and there might be occasions when the competitive carrier like Globalcom could lease that loop facility to that particular building. Traditionally or historically,
What would be the difference between leasing from Bell and leasing from another carrier?
The only question would be availability of that alternative loop facility. And there may not be. Certainly, as you get out into the more rural areas or suburban areas, those types of high-capacity loops become less and less available from an alternative carrier.
Okay. So that's helpful. Thank you.
So the issue is whether the district court erred when it held that Section 13801 was preempted by the FCC's rules adopted in the TRO, the Triennial Review Order, and the TRRO, or the Triennial Review Remand Order, where the federal court implemented Section 251. Now, Section 251 of the Federal Act imposes certain minimum unbundling obligations on AT&T. And the district court concluded that those minimum unbundling obligations under, adopted under Section 251 were the only unbundling obligations that AT&T was required to abide by, and that any additional unbundling obligations or the making available these network elements like DS1, high-capacity loops and high-capacity transport facilities would be preempted because that there was an absolute bar on those unbundling requirements. That's not an accurate finding by the court below. Section 271 of the Federal Act.
I don't understand the relation between 271 and 251. Because 251D2 talks about the necessity for access and the failure, if you don't obtain it, you know, can't provide service, so forth. That I understand, and then the savings clause. But why do we have to get into 271? That seems to be about the FCC's authority to regulate long-distance service.
Section 271 is the empirical evidence that the court should have relied upon below to find that unbundled network elements, that 251 is not the minimum or not the only unbundling requirements available.
Well, I don't understand. What in 271 requires unbundling?
Section 271 requires that if AT&T wants to get into the long-distance business. I'm sorry,
what's the section?
271C.
Yeah. Requirements for providing in-region inter-LATA services?
Yes. In order to provide that service, there is a checklist of items that AT&T is required to provide, including high-capacity loops, switching, and other such network elements. It's those 271 requirements that demonstrate that 251 is not the only unbundling requirements required by federal law. The difference between 251 obligations and the
The unbundling requirements you're defending are the state's unbundling requirements.
Correct. And we only use 271 as in the empirical evidence like required under the Frank Brothers case and conflict preemption case.
Sound to me a correct description of a statute. I don't know what you mean by empirical.
There must be evidence to show that
a statute isn't evidence, right?
Correct. But it's the empirical, it's the demonstration that Section 251 is not the only unbundling requirements
but
required by federal law.
We're not talking about federal unbundling requirements, we're talking about state unbundling requirements.
And 271 demonstrates that the unbundling obligations imposed by Section 13801 do not frustrate the purpose of the federal act, and that it's possible for AT&T to comply with.
Well, are you saying that if there were no state statute, Section 271 would require the unbundling?
Section 271 would require the unbundling, yes, but at a different price than required by the state law.
A higher price.
That's undetermined because Illinois Bell did not file tariffs or did not file rates to implement the state unbundling obligations.
Why didn't you ask for relief under 271 if you might be able to get it cheaper?
That would be a matter before the FCC and not before the state court.
You can go before the FCC, can't you?
Parties have gone before the FCC.
Before the FCC and ask for this unbundling, can't you?
It's a question of determining the rates, and there are petitions.
Well, you didn't know whether it would be a higher rate or a lower rate.
And the FCC, there's petitions pending currently at the FCC to determine what the
petition.
Globalcom does not have a petition pending.
But others have petitions.
Others have petitions pending.
So it's an alternative route.
Yes, including other state public service commissions. I'll defer the rest of the time to Mr. Stanton on behalf of the Illinois Commerce Commission. Thank you.
Stanton.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Tom Stanton on behalf of the ICC Commissioners.
Does every state have a commission that's similar to the Illinois Commerce Commission that is involved in this sort of thing?
To my knowledge, yes. The state commissions have been the ones who traditionally regulated the local telephone exchange service. That's right.
So all the states have this, and are the rules different in each state?
They can be. Certainly, the states can adopt additional consistent requirements to the federal act. So yes, states can establish their own requirements in addition to the policies and the requirements set at the federal level.
Are there states that either voluntarily or involuntarily just defer to the FCC?
I think most states have been pretty active in terms of what they want to regulate in the local market. They can establish their own performance remedies, making sure that the ILECs comply with the standards of the Act, and they also will adopt their own state requirements. Illinois is a little different, though, because we have... Illinois is a little different because we have a specific state statute that sets forth additional unbundling requirements. There's many states that don't have this type of statute, and they rely just generally on their implicit authority. And that's where they've kind of run into problems, bumping up against the 251 and 27.
I don't understand. What difference does it make to 251, whether a state acts through its legislature or through its regulatory authority?
No, Judge Boser, it certainly can. I'm just saying that there have been questions with respect to authority, where that comes from. Certainly the Act preserves state authority to adopt additional unbundling requirements that exceed 251s. There has been questions, and that's where
there must be limits on that, right?
Right. They have to be consistent with, and they can't substantially prevent the implementation of the federal regulatory regime. But Congress did allow states to adopt additional requirements, and that makes perfect sense because the states.
But doesn't the FCC? Shouldn't the FCC have the authority to decide whether a particular state unbundling requirement is consistent with the federal scheme?
Yes, ultimately that's right, Your Honor. It becomes an issue of preemption. You're absolutely right, and that's why there's statutory standards.
Why is it absolutely right in this case?
Because the Illinois requirements are consistent with both 251.
Well, that's what you say, but these are highly technical issues. Why shouldn't the FCC decide rather than judges?
Well, AT&T brought the suit here in district court. I mean, they certainly could go.
They think you're interfering with what the FCC wants.
Right, but certainly a carrier could file a complaint. You're absolutely right. File a complaint with the FCC, pointing out any state requirement and alleging that requirement is inconsistent with the Act and the FCC's implementation of the Act. But AT&T hasn't done that. They came here to the district court, ex parte Young preemption.
Is there any procedure by which we could refer these issues to the FCC, primary jurisdiction, something of that sort?
There's certainly the primary jurisdiction doctrine. The First Circuit in the Verizon New England case referred an issue on the scope of 271. They referred an issue on what exactly was...
Something more concrete. We should have the FCC decide, at least in the first instance, whether these state unbundling requirements would interfere with the federal scheme.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the FCC would be set up to handle all of the, 50 states' requirements, but...
I think the federal judiciary is set up to handle that?
In each district court, yeah.
Yeah? I think they could really? You think our judges are experts on telecommunications policy?
Well, they're experts on, certainly, preemption.
That doesn't cut the cake.
We're certainly not expert on the... technologies here. I'm still on page one of the glossary.
you certainly do it under 252E6. When the cases do come out of the arbitration, in the process within the Act, those cases go to the federal district courts and are reviewed under the standards in 252E6. So there is, the district courts are doing these things. This is a step out of that. This is, they're challenging an independent state statute. And that's preempted at the Act, but the district courts do have the authority to review the cases coming out of the 252 arbitration process. But that's not this case.
If anything further?
I guess I just want to point the court that to the district court. What the district court did was that it thought we were enforcing Section 271, but that's not what we're doing here. We're enforcing our own state statute.
271 is a complete red herring. This is a 251 case. The question is whether you meet this standard.
And we think we certainly do, because the Illinois requirements have to be priced at a non-teller rate.
What does this mean in D2? In determining what network elements should be made available for purposes of C3, the commission shall consider it a minimum, etc. That sounds as if the commission makes the decision as to a particular unbundling proposal, and then it's judicially reviewed.
That's right. That's under the impairment standard. So that's a 252 analysis. Here, AT&T, let me give you an example. Take a loop. AT&T has to provide that loop under Section 252D. The FCC has said that there's impairments, so therefore you have to unbundle it. Because AT&T is also a Bell operating company that's obtained long-distance authority, they must satisfy that 14-point checklist that Mr. Henry mentioned to you under Section 271. So they also have to provide that same piece of equipment, the loop.
That isn't my question. What is the significance of the commission shall consider?
That the FCC gets to determine which network elements on a nationwide basis can be the ILEC should unbundle.
Well, but how does the commission's determination relate to the particular unbundling that you want?
Okay. The FCC unbundles under 252 if there's impairment. That's whether the failure to provide access to network elements would impair. So the FCC looks to see if that particular element, if the CLEX would be impaired by the absence of that element. And if it finds impairment...
Have they looked at your elements, whatever Globalcom wants unbundled? Have they looked at that?
No, but the FCC hasn't specifically looked at that, but what we've done is we've said, okay...
I don't care what you've done. What has the FCC done?
The FCC has not looked at any individual state's requirements.
But isn't it supposed to under this provision? It says what network elements should be made available.
That's the FCC's authority under 251D2.
That's what we're if you look at
251...
Get to 271. Look.
No, if you...
I don't understand this. The FCC makes a decision, you have to unbundle X, Y, and Z. And then the state comes along and says you have to unbundle H. And how does that decision by the state relate to what the FCC has decided? Do we have to look at what the FCC has ordered unbundled and see whether... So, the FCC... You think the state can order further unbundling and then a district court decides whether the further unbundling interferes with federal policy? Is that how this works?
That's right. Yeah, that's how it works under the arbitration.
Don't we have to look very closely at a specific state unbundling proposal in relation to the federal policy? Don't we have to do that?
Right. Well, yeah. The FCC adopted a number of network elements that the FCC said that the ILEC
provides. Issues here. They say, you know, if you have a wire center or a switching station where it has 60,000 lines, then you're not going to be allowed to insist on unbundling. That shows it's a rich market. You're going to have to invest yourself, create your own facility, and that's right. So how are we supposed to analyze that?
Well, if you're taking the switch, if the FCC had at one time said that the switch had to be unbundled, all ILECs had to unbundle.
Well, use my 60,000 example.
I don't know if it gets down to that level of detail.
Well, I saw that in the briefs. There is some 60,000. There's an argument over the unbundling when you have 60,000 lines?
Oh, right. That's an impairment determination. The FCC initially, in the first go-round, required that all loops, all switches, and all transport be unbundled. The FCC found the impairment under 252 and said all these elements have to be unbundled. They ratcheted that back in subsequent orders, and so the 60,000 criteria you're talking about, that's the standard on whether it's impaired or not impaired. Now, the state commissions make that determination, in fact.
Yeah, so the FCC ratchets back to 60,000, and the state commission disagrees and requires unbundling. Well, isn't that a straight clash between state policy and federal policy?
It depends, and that's where I think 271 comes in.
It
depends on what provision the element has to be unbundled under.
Now, let's be concrete about it. What does it depend on?
It depends on if the same element can be unbundled under Section 251D2 under that impairment standard. And when that's the case, it's provided.
I don't want to get into this. Look, the commission ratcheted. I mean, you know, you're dealing with real amateurs, at least with respect to myself. You know, this is a complicated statute. Your brief's very abstract of all parties, very abstract. It's as if you thought you were dealing with the Illinois Commerce Commission. So you have to be very simple, at least as far as I'm concerned. Now, apparently the commission thought that when we get up to the 60,000 lines, there shouldn't be a requirement of unbundling. The competitor, the Globalcom, should build its own facility. Okay. Now, in deciding whether the state commission, can require unbundling, what exactly does one consider? Is this an economic question? Can Globalcom compete if it has to build its own facility? Is it a matter of, you know, economies of scale? Is it market surveys to determine whether there's enough business so that Globalcom could build an efficient facility? Is that how these issues are decided? Is that what a district court is supposed to decide?
No, I think what the...
What is it supposed to decide?
District court is supposed to decide whether the state requirement conflicts with the federal requirement in and of itself. Again,
I don't know what in and of itself means. If the FCC says, look, 60,000... That's a rich market, Globalcom. You can afford to build your own facility. We want you to build your own facility. We want you to invest. We don't want you to just be a kind of leech sucking blood from Bell Telephone facilities. You have to invest your own money. That's how we get better communications. Now, if that judgment is incorporated into their ratcheting back decision, doesn't that supersede the state's contrary judgment?
If it were inconsistent.
Excuse me?
If the state's requirement was inconsistent with that federal requirement.
I don't think you're listening to me. I'm saying the FCC says we've ratcheted back to 60,000 because it's a rich market, and these rich markets, we want the Globalcoms to invest their own facilities. Now, if the state comes along and says, no, we want Bell Telephone to unbundle, why isn't that squarely inconsistent with the FCC's policy?
Because it depends on the pricing. This issue was
that
ultimately
I don't understand
about
either.
Pricing.
The FCC says ratcheting. The FCC says, we want you to build another facility. And the state says, no, we want you to piggyback on Bell. Now, why isn't that a clash?
It's not a clash because it depends on the pricing.
The price of what?
When the FCC finds impairment and requires unbundling under the 251D2 standard, it's established a TELRIC-based rate, which is a very low rate.
No, I'm talking about a case where the FCC does not require unbundling, where the state requires the unbundling. So how does price enter?
Well, the FCC has established certain network elements that must be provided at TELRIC-based prices.
We're talking about a situation where the commission has said The FCC has said no unbundling. So, oh, I guess. So what you're concerned about, if they say no unbundling, is it... So, well, I don't understand. If they say no unbundling, Globalcom will have to build its own facility, right? So why would AT&T's prices make a difference anymore?
Because the FCC said they don't have to provide the element at a TELRIC-based price. They still have to provide the element where it's listed in another section of the Act, but at a just and reasonable price. So that's what I'm trying to explain to you, Your Honor.
You're saying Globalcom could still get...
Could still get that DS1 loop or the DS3 loop, because AT&T must provide that under 271.
Okay, that's fine. So they can either build their own facility or they can lease lines at a price, right? Okay. So what's the problem?
We don't see a problem. We see the Illinois requirements.
There's no problem. Why we have a case? So if they say you can unbundle, what? I mean, if FCC says you can unbundle, nevertheless, you can come charging back in and say you want to lease these lines at this TELRIC price?
Right.
And the FCC is, what, the FCC says no, or what?
Right, where the FCC has said that AT&T does not have to unbundle a particular element at a TELRIC price. What I'm saying is...
No, wait a second. They say you'll have to pay a higher price. You still can demand the service, but you don't get TELRIC.
Right.
Pay a higher price.
So
TELRIC price. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a clash. The FCC thinks, you still can release lines, but we're not going to give you this bargain cost, price cost. We're not going to allow you to piggyback so inexpensively. You have to pay a higher price because we want to encourage Globalcom to invest and so on and so forth. So why isn't, you know, you have a straight clash between federal policy and state policy.
But that's just it, Your Honor. There's not a clash because where the FCC says...
It's a clash because the FCC doesn't think you should be entitled to a low price. It's a clash. That's a disagreement.
Right, but the Illinois requirements parallel the federal requirements. Where AT&T must provide a network element at a TELRIC-based price, Illinois says you have to provide the same element under Illinois law at that TELRIC price. However, where the FCC has said, no, AT&T, you don't have to provide that element at a TELRIC price, and AT&T must, under a different section of the Federal Act, Section 271, must still provide the same exact element, same physical element, but just at not a TELRIC price, the lower price, at a much higher price. Illinois has said the same thing, that you must provide that element not at a TELRIC price, but at the just and reasonable price like you do under Section 271. Now, the ICC hasn't set a particular price, but we have set the standard. They're both just and reasonable
standards. But it's going to be a lower price, obviously.
Under the just and reasonable standard, it will be a higher price than TELRIC.
No, but it's going to be a lower price. It's going to be a lower price than AT&T, than the FCC would allow AT&T to charge.
No, under the TELRIC price is the lower price. The TELRIC price is the hypothetical network. What would be the most?
What's your quarrel with AT&T then?
I'm not sure we have a quarrel with AT&T. They have a quarrel with our statute.
Well, they want to charge you more, obviously, don't they?
Oh, okay, Globalcom, right. But the FCC established the lower TELRIC rate for those...
No, but AT&T wants to charge a higher price, right?
Right? Does that
violate federal law or just state law?
No, it doesn't violate either. In the instances where AT&T does not have to provide the unbundled network element under 251 at a TELRIC-based price... AT&T has to provide the element under 271. The FCC has said that's a just and reasonable price. Illinois, we say the same thing. We say if you have to provide that element under 271, you're to charge a non-TELRIC just and reasonable price. So there's no conflict.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Stanton. We'll hear from Mr. Livingston.
If it please the court, Ted Livingston for AT&T. I'd like to just pick up on the discussion that was just taking place. If an element is no longer required to be unbundled under 251 because the FCC has determined there's no impairment in the case of a Bell operating company like AT&T. That element becomes exclusively a 271 element. And there is a very significant pricing standard conflict here. Under 271, the FCC has said the price is a market price as opposed to a regulated price. That's a quote out of the Uni Remand Order at paragraph 473. And it said it wants an example of what a, quote, just and reasonable price appropriate for 271 would be. It says, well, a rate equal to the rate that's in the access tariff, or the rate that's equal to the one that's arrived at through freely negotiated arm's-length agreements. Mr. Kelly said he could get his high-capacity circuits, and they're available to him. He could build his own, as Your Honor indicated, but he could also buy them under a commercial agreement, or he could buy them under our access tariff. He could negotiate an agreement with us, just like the FCC contemplated parties would do to get 271 elements, or he could buy it out of the access tariff. And he doesn't want that, because Illinois, under 801, is going to give him a substantially lower rate. And that's because 801 requires a cost-based rate. That's what 801G says. The rate for 801 elements shall be a cost-based rate set by the commission. Mm-hmm. So you have a classic conflict between the pricing standards. Under 801, the price is a regulated rate that's cost-based and set by the state commission, obviously to give a break to people like Globalcom. Under the federal statute for that same element, one thing we have to keep in mind here is we don't have 801 elements over here in one bucket and 271 elements over here in another bucket. They're one and the same. We're talking about exactly the same thing. And so basically the FCC has said with respect to those same elements, no, AT&T can charge a market rate. And the 11th Circuit has confirmed that in a recent decision in June in the Nuvox case. They can charge a market rate. They can charge a rate that's arrived at through freely negotiated arm's length agreements. They can charge a rate that's in their access tariff. But Illinois doesn't want that. Globalcom doesn't want that. In the triennial review order, in paragraph 657, the FCC held that the pricing standard in 252D1, that's the pricing standard that applies to a network element that has to be unbundled under 251 because there's impairment. That pricing standard is a rate that's based on the cost of providing the element.
So is the conflict here between an FCC policy of essentially requiring the carriers like Globalcom to well, let me see if I understand it. So what you're saying is, because Bell is an interstate carrier, the unbundling duty, there's unbundling required by federal law by 271, but that the FCC's policy is that the price for that unbundling is a market price rather than a cost. Is that accurate?
That's accurate, Your Honor. But I would say that the conflict that dooms 801 is its conflict with 251, because a state requirement to survive preemption.
Well, that's the stand.
Has to be consistent with 251. And Your Honor posed an example of X, Y, and Z.
I see. You're saying even though the unbundling is required by 271, if the state tries to impose conditions on that unbundling, it has to comply with 251. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I'm saying that even if they were right that there's some kind of consistency between 801 on the one hand and 271 on the other, that doesn't matter, because to survive preemption, state requirements have to be consistent with 251. That's what Part 2 of the Act says, and in the very savings clauses that they rely on.
Well, suppose they presented evidence that if they have to pay this market-based price for unbundling with the access tariff, which I'm sure is worse, if they have to pay this market price, they're not going to be able to provide service.
Well, the FCC has already determined that they can't. The FCC is charged by Congress with determining...
In a specific proceeding involving Globalcom or more something more global?
In a proceeding involving the very elements that Globalcom wants, based upon the FCC's determination of the competitive environment and based upon what
a reasonable,
efficient...
Is that where
carrier.
The 60,000 line rule comes from?
That's what the 60,000 line is. But more to the point, the FCC is charged with determining what elements need to be unbundled and what elements can't be required to be unbundled. The FCC...
But as I say, is the 60,000 rule, is that part of that? They've decided if there are more than 60,000 lines?
Basically what the FCC did in the case of high-capacity circuits is... It determined that in certain circumstances, there is no impairment.
Right.
And therefore, it imposed a bar on unbundling requirements where those circumstances
except
exist.
Except under 271.
Except under 271. Of course, 271's obligations are completely conditional and voluntary, as opposed to 801's, which are certainly unconditional and not voluntary in the least.
But I thought 271, there still was required unbundling. It was just the price that was not regulated, essentially.
It is a fact if we choose to get into long distance, to get authority to get into long distance, and to stay into long distance, that there is a requirement, a conditional requirement, that we provide these elements. But the FCC has said because there's no impairment, obviously you can go ahead and charge a market price.
Right. So they could still come to you and say in this 60,000 line facility they could demand access, but they'd be under 271. Is that what you're saying? They'd have to pay the market price of the access tariff price.
They can come to us like a lot of other carriers have come to us and negotiated an agreement or bought under our tariff.
Okay, so I understand. Now, what about the loop? So what if they say, you know, we can't reach the customer. We'd have to dig up the street, and they won't let us do it. Now,
those are the high-capacity circuits they could lease under the tariff or pursuant to a commercial agreement.
Oh, the DS1s and so on. I see. That's, again, now that would be a 271. Again, a 271
those are elements governed by 271. Those are elements because under 271.
Okay, so you're saying the FCC has... You're saying the FCC has decided that have they decided in effect that pushing Globalcom under 271 will not impair its ability to provide service?
Precisely.
Precisely. How the two statutes tie together.
Precisely. And impairment plays a key role. You want to foster competition on the one hand, but you don't want synthetic competition. You want real, sustainable, facilities-based competition. So you give the new entrants access to our elements at cost-based rates only where they're impaired, only where it's absolutely necessary in order to foster competition. You want them where they can to invest in their own facilities, to buy in the open market, to build their own networks, because that's what brings about sustainable facilities-based competition, and that's what Congress wanted. That's evident in the legislative history, and the FCC has explicitly held that. Where unbundling is required, where there's no impairment, national policy is undermined. These investments that the FCC and Congress want new entrants who are unimpaired to make, they won't make them, and facilities-based competition won't grow, won't develop, won't prosper. So the Illinois Act, and the way it's been implemented, undermines national policy. And the FCC really has said all it really needs to say. It looked at every one of the elements that they're requiring us to provide at cost-based rates, and it said there is no impairment. With respect to some, it said no impairment anywhere, and it imposed a nationwide bar on unbundling obligations. As to others, as we talked about, they imposed a bar in certain circumstances because they determined there was no impairment in certain circumstances. The 60,000 example. And the FCC has also
said... What if they came to you for their loops and... the loops... Your access tariff for the loops, is that what an ordinary customer would pay?
Well, the access tariffs are a wholesale instrument, so it applies to purchases by carriers. And a high-capacity circuit can either run from a switch to a business, in which case it's a loop, or it can run between wire centers, in which case it's transport. But it's a high-capacity circuit. And the FCC has determined that where certain circumstances exist, where you have a rich market, there is no impairment. And in order to foster what Congress wanted, we're going to have these people purchase from alternative sources on the open market or build their own. We want vibrant facilities-based competition.
Could Globalcom have gone to the FCC and said, Your unbundling rule, which is pushing us under 271, is mistaken. It's crushing us. Maybe it works in the country as a whole, but in Illinois, it's going to give Bell a monopoly. Is there some route for them to do that?
In fact, associations, organizations of competing carriers, among others, appealed the FCC orders, which imposed these nationwide bars.
Oh, that's the one that the D.C. Circuit eventually...
Yeah, they basically appealed the triennial review
order.
So that
proceeding has...
Yeah, and the Hobbs Act Court has spoken. The Hobbs Act Court affirmed those nationwide bars. They came in and said the FCC messed up. The FCC did not make a proper impairment determination. So we want you to reverse this. And the D.C. Circuit looked at this and affirmed. And it's a Hobbs Act Court, and that, of course, is binding throughout the country. So... Basically, what Illinois has done through 801 is to require precisely what the FCC has rejected. And the FCC, in answer to your discussion about primary jurisdiction, the FCC has already said all it needs to say. It said in the Bell South preemption order, where a state requires unbundled access where we have determined, we the FCC have determined, on a nationwide basis, there shall not be unbundled access. That state decision violates federal law. It is inconsistent with 251 and our regulations, and it substantially prevents implementation of the federal scheme reflected in 251, excuse me, and our implementing regulations. The very savings clauses that they rely on, 251D3 and 261B and C, those provisions express the Act's intent that laws like 801 are preempted. They say state requirements are permitted, but only if they are consistent with 251, only if they're consistent with the FCC's implementing regulations under 251, and only if they don't substantially prevent implementation of the federal scheme.
What would be an example of a state regulation or order that you would acknowledge was protected by the savings clause?
In the unbundling sphere, I don't think there is any anymore.
No, not unbundling, anything. Well, we want to make sure that the savings clause has some scope, right? So,
and the FCC has held what that scope is. It's spoken.
Well, that's why I like an example of where something is saved and the state is allowed to It says the commission shall not preclude the enforcement of any regulation, order, policy, et cetera, et cetera. Establishes access as long as it's consistent and doesn't prevent implementation.
Well,
there must be something the ICC is allowed to do.
In the network element area, I can't think of any.
Network elements, but anything. The whole ICC can't be preempted.
Well, the ICC acts when, with respect to the Federal Act. Well, the Federal Act basically, and this is unquestionable, as Justice Scalia indicated, took away regulation of matters addressed by the Act from the states.
But is anything left for the states?
They certainly act as deputized federal regulators because they, in implementing the Act. Now, there may be state requirements with respect to service quality, issues not specifically addressed by the Act, which, of course, the states can impose service quality obligations so long as they are consistent with 251 and 252. They can do that. But with respect to unbundling, the D.C. Circuit basically said the FCC has exclusive authority to determine what's unbundled and what cannot be required to be unbundled. The states can't do it because they don't have the national perspective. That's what the Hobbs Act Court in the 2004 case held. So I think in the unbundling sphere, basically, except for implementation, the state is out of the game. Because the FCC has basically covered the waterfront. It's looked at every conceivable network element, and it's determined with respect to each, is there impairment or isn't there impairment? Or if there is there impairment in all circumstances? And where there is no impairment, consistent with what Congress dictated, the FCC has determined there shall be no unbundling requirements. No unbundling requirements. And basically what Illinois has done is it's taken that federal requirement, which is the touchstone of national unbundling policy, which is critically important to the federal scheme, and it's tossed it under the scrap heap of time, the ICC's own words. And that's its own words in the implementing order. And it has required precisely what 251 of the Act does not permit, forced unbundling where there's no impairment.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be happy to address any questions Your Honor might have.
Thank you, Mr. Livingston. So, Mr. Stanton or Mr. Kelly, would you like a 2 minutes to respond as I ask so many questions?
Thank you, Your Honor. The FCC has not determined what the rates are under Section 271. Mr. Livingston had suggested that they were market-based rates. The statute, Section 271, says the rates shall be just and reasonable, and the FCC has never determined what those rates shall be for those unbundled, for those network elements required to be provided under Section 271. In addition, the Illinois Commerce Commission has not determined what the rates are for the Section 13801 network elements that are required to be made available under Section 13801.
What's the litigation about?
AT&T and the court below concludes or argues that that there's field preemption, that the states have no authority.
What makes you think you'd be worse off under federal rate setting than state rate setting?
The commission, because there is not complete field preemption, the Illinois Commerce Commission should be given the opportunity
to set the rates.
But
wait, you're Global Com, right?
Yes.
So if you don't know what rates would be set under 801 versus under 271, why wouldn't you want to find out that before you brought a lawsuit?
There was a case pending at the Illinois Commerce Commission where the commission directed AT&T to file the rates under Section 13801. AT&T didn't do so. Instead, they filed a federal court complaint preempting the state from acting, and the court enjoined the state from acting. So there was an opportunity for AT&T and the Illinois Commerce Commission to determine what the appropriate rates would be.
But you must think you'd do better under Illinois rate setting than under federal.
I would think so, but I'm not sure that.
Why would you think so?
Actually, I'm not sure that we would. I really don't know. I would.
Sure, but you think so. So I'm asking you why you think so.
It's quite possible that in different network elements would have different rates under the pricing standard under 13801 than under the federal just and reasonable standard. Some network elements may have the same rate. Some might have different rates. So I'll clarify my answer in that regard. We just don't know what those rates are going to be because the Illinois Commerce Commission was enjoined from considering those, and AT&T never filed rates to the Illinois Commerce Commission to implement Section 13801.
So are you saying, in very sharp contradiction to Mr. Livingston, that the FCC has never said anything about the pricing of services required to be unbundled under 271?
The FCC has said that the rates shall be just and reasonable, but has never determined what those just and reasonable rates are. There are petitions pending at the FCC to set Section 271 prices, but the FCC has not acted on those petitions. Mm-hmm. I would just like to clarify also, thank you very much, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you.